You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Timothy Glenn. Timothy is an author, astrologer, numerologist, and spiritual reader. He came into this life without the veils pulled all the way down. Like many of us, he never fit into the real world. Early years include music, voice, and exposure to astrology. Theatrical training and performance prepared him for a brief stint as a minister. He has done past life regression, sound healing, astrology, and now does multidimensional soul purpose readings, which I highly recommend. He has written an e-book titled The Zephyrus Archives, Volume 1, Mission of Eternity. You can find out more on his website at www.soulpurposereadings.com. So let's welcome Tim back to the show now. Hi, Timothy. How are you?
Well, like most of us, I'm running on fumes, but that's all cool.
Yeah, I think I'm just about out of gas myself.
Yeah, okay, you can relate.
Yeah, and you know, where's the electric car or the hydrogen car? I mean, come on now. We're supposed to have these things decades ago. I just don't understand it.
Well, what about the hovercraft here?
Oh, well, yeah, that, you know, I see where they're trying to make tires last forever, and unfortunately, forever means about, you know, 2 or 3 years before cars don't need tires, so I think they're kind of wasting their research funds.
Yeah, well, you know, we talk about things like hovercraft, but and how the technologies are suppressed, but really, if you look at the way these idiots drive out here in automobiles, you're going to turn them loose in hovercraft?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what they had developed bumper cars for, at the, you know, at the funny farms. Yeah, because that's probably what we're doing right now. I wouldn't be surprised if you took a long view of the planet, and it probably looks like a bunch of bumper cars hitting each other. And, you know, being guided to go bang.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty wild time here. It's always been crazy, but we're just reaching this fever pitch at this point.
Well, I agree with you, and it just seems like the world's pretty much in insanity mode now, and we know that usually it's followed by chaos and all kinds of crazy things, but that's not certain. What kind of things have you noticed that contribute to the loony bin?
Well, that's a long list. But really, I mean, we're you know, in this crazy time because the reality that people have lived here is unraveling within them and around them. And, well, that includes us. I mean, what
right.
we had accepted as reality, we know now is nonsense. It's just illusion. It's the matrix. And we welcome this dissolving so we can step into something that is, like, real with a capital R.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas most people we see, shall we say, are not taking this very gracefully.
I would agree with you on that one.
Yeah. So it's pretty wild. They, you know, really, I mean, that they are not letting go of the old concepts, the old way, and their belief in the matrix as the ultimate reality. And with it falling apart around their ears, they are, well, yeah, they're in the loony bin now.
Right, right. And, you know, the political arena has always been a wonderful place to manipulate the masses. You know, you can go back to Roman times or Egyptian or Sumerian or probably right back to the beginning and see that there has always been bread and circuses, and there's always been some kind of control group manipulating the masses, even if the masses only existed in a cave and there were only three of them. There had to be somebody with a big club that went, you know, bonk when he didn't like what the other two were doing. But the politics is going zonkers, and you know, I'm not going to get into that on a personal level with any of the politicians that are out there. But I've done enough research to know what's going on, and I think that if the truth came out, they'd all be strung up and you know, singing their last breath.
Well, yeah, it's all been pretty crazy all the way along. I mean, yeah, go back through the millennia, it's all the same old nonsense. But yeah, we don't need to go into all the nitty-gritty details of this, oh God, this circus that's going on out there. But that's just another game or an aspect of the old game of distraction. Because at this time, if we are focusing more on our spiritual unfoldment, our evolution, etc., then we are more prepared to deal with the shifts as they come at us. And we have some pretty serious shifts coming at us. In fact, recently you sent out an email which was a link to Carla Fox's blog, and in the subject line you simply wrote the word incoming.
Oh, by the way, I wrote to Carla. She's going to be on the show next week, and she said to say hello to you.
Okay, cool. Say hi back, and hi, Carla. You're probably listening.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So in that blog that she wrote, she was talking about the chaotic background noise, and that's kind of an understatement, isn't it?
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah. But, you know, she said that it seems to be not just our planet, but the whole solar system and probably far beyond it, that's now going to be reset. Yes, it's like the big reset button is being pushed, and she even said that it would be erased of sentient life sometime in the near future.
Wow. Well, that wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, so on the theme of incoming...
Oh, by the way, there's an asteroid coming in, but just to know, to let you know that the synchronicity is working out.
Good. Okay, cool. Yeah. Now, the asteroid, that's another story altogether, and we'll see. You know, the asteroid's coming in. So the question comes up there, well, is that just happening in nature, or is that a
right.
projected missile, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. I wouldn't put it past some of these creatures on this planet and beyond it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And same thing with the moon. And, you know, at least people are finally talking about the moon base being fake. And people are being raised with awareness and about the Mars base as well that exists. And corporations are supposedly or allegedly, you're supposed to say that, mining the far side of the moon for all kinds of stuff 24/7. And so, you know, these things have been going on for decades, and we're just now figuring it out. And, you know, we just have to be patient. But you mentioned incoming. What were you going to say?
Well, incoming, we get to a subject that I've never addressed before.
Oh.
I started reading about it in 1977, because in 1976 there was a book published called The 12th Planet.
Oh.
You know, Zechariah Sitchin started.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, so, you know, that was the buzz for a while back then, you know, talking about Nibiru and all that fun stuff. You know, and the occupants, the Anunnaki, our good buddies.
Oh, yes, our very dear friends.
Yes, right. Okay, yeah.
I just had one to dinner the other night. He just couldn't get his scales to, you know, stop from knocking things off the table. But otherwise, actually, they look normal. They're blonde. They can be blonde and blue-eyed and anything you want. So they're
well,
not.
Be all kinds of things.
Yeah, exactly. So go on.
Yeah, okay. So at any rate, the Proterians were asked about it in the early 90s, and they were not familiar with the name Nibiru, but according to the description that was given by the person asking the question, they said, oh, that, yeah, we just call that the battle planet, because it's occupied by unfriendly beings. And they're fighting themselves, they're fighting each other, and they're fighting other beings all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was just the battle planet. And nobody ever said anything about it after that.
Huh.
And so I've been watching this for years. And, in fact, If you go to Laura Bruno's blog and you go to search this blog, you can type in 2016, A Call to Creatorship. That's an article that I just had posted. It was supposed to be New Year's, but it turned out to be like late February or something. That's the way things are going with this linear time thing, or what Proterian calls the TikTok reality.
Ah.
Yes, but in that article, that is the first public statement I've ever made acknowledging the existence of Nibiru and the brown dwarf star that it orbits, often known as Nemesis.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. Go on.
Yeah. Of course, it's called different things. Some people refer to that brown dwarf star as Hercobolus or Wormwood.
Mm-hmm.
Some call it the Destroyer or the Winged Destroyer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it, this was outlined for us long ago by Zechariah Sitchin. And now, are you familiar with Robert Sutton Harrington?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Well, see, he was the chief astronomer at the United States Naval Observatory. And he actually gave Sitchin an interview. And it was part of a TV documentary. So if you want to check that out, it's online. You can find it. It's called Are We Alone?
Oh, wow. That sounds good.
Yeah, and Robert Harrington is sitting there at his desk, you know, with Sitchin sitting right across the desk from him, and he's showing him how they had calculated what they had been observing, and he even told Sitchin, you know, well, I've seen it now. The only thing we have to do is name it.
Huh.
And Sitchin said, well, it's already been named.
On the Sumerian tablet.
Right, it's right there. It's Nibiru. Yeah. And so, but I'd been looking at different satellite images and all kinds of things for some time now, and then finally I just remote viewed it. It we got incoming, kids, and this mini solar system is what it is, because it's a brown dwarf star with maybe three little planets around it and seem to be a couple moons and maybe a couple asteroids or something. But, you know, when you're in that state of remote viewing, you're not thinking in linear terms. So you're not being real analytical. So as I was observing it, the brown dwarf itself didn't seem to be surprising or anything else there, except Nibiru itself. I was surprised because it looked bigger than I thought it was going to be, and it felt artificial.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, I was contemplating that, and I had a little chat with my friends, the Proterians, and actually what came out of that was, well, it's a natural planet that is smaller than what I was seeing, because what I was seeing was their Dyson sphere. Now, a Dyson sphere is an artificial atmosphere created around a planet. So, named from Freeman Dyson, who was a physicist and mathematician, born in England, had a career here in America, and all that good stuff. And he presented all kinds of cool ideas. But he said that any sufficiently advanced technology is going to end up with an artificial environment, you know, creating this sphere around the planet, because that way you can maintain the atmosphere that you want for your lives. You know, you can keep the meteors out, and you can keep the solar flare, and you know, or your planet from getting buffeted too much by solar winds or whatever else, and you can keep in heat if you need to keep in the heat and so forth. And so what I was looking at was the Dyson sphere.
Ah,
and remember what Sitchin had always talked about was that the Anunnaki came here to mine gold to use in their atmosphere, to help maintain their atmosphere, which was actually artificially maintained because they had a Dyson sphere.
Okay.
Yeah. So at any rate, it does appear that we're going to be visited ere long by this mini solar system. And it comes into our solar system at maybe like a 30 or 40 degree angle from the south. It doesn't come in. It doesn't come in on our ecliptic. And from what I can discern here, it came across the ecliptic up into the northern part of our solar system here. 2008, and that was kind of a crazy year, if you remember that one.
Oh, yeah, all the bank bailouts.
The insanity of 2008.
Oh, that was, indeed insane.
Yes, and so then it went up above our ecliptic, and it has been looping around the sun. Because if you look at the diagrams that both Harrington and Sitchin had, it comes in and it loops around pretty close to the sun and then gets whipped back out in its long, long, strange elliptical orbit.
Mm, mm-hmm.
And there's another guy that you might, people might want to look up, and that's a Chilean astronomer who's no longer with us, Carlos Munoz Ferrada. And he was one who understood all this, and if you speak Spanish, great, you can just listen to him. Otherwise, you'll have to depend on somebody else's translation. But really, really interesting, pointing out that this doesn't seem to obey the laws of celestial mechanics that we've imagined to be the real laws. So it does very strange things. But at any rate, it comes into our solar system proper, and then it crosses the ecliptic between the orbits of Mars and Jupiter.
Hmm.
Goes up around the sun and comes back in this like slingshot effect to be flung back out in that long orbit. But it comes in, since it's being pulled by the sun, it comes in tighter, and it comes down between the orbits of Venus and Earth.
Hmm.
And it's not that every 3,600 years we're going to have total disaster here, because it depends on where Earth is when it comes through that point. Because we could be completely on the other side of the sun, and so not much is going to happen. But apparently, and of course if we go into the prophecies of the Earth changes and get into what the Native Americans have said and all these other indigenous people and so on and so forth, evidently we're going to get a real close flyby this time.
Or a good whopping.
Yeah. And back to that blog from Carla Fox, she said that one of the people in her group had said that she saw the oceans just like sweeping over half of this continent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that reminded me of a couple dreams I had back in the year 2000.
Wow.
Ooh.
What were they?
Okay. Now, at that time, I was living on the San Carlos Apache Reservation down in Arizona, and the first of the two dreams was really kind of interesting, because we're talking with all the Native Indian or Native Americans about, the coming Earth changes and what they have envisioned and so forth, and of course, there's lots of talk about, the big waves coming in from the oceans.
Oh, yeah. They're coming.
The global coastal event. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so in this dream, I was in San Francisco, and I was on the top floor of one of these big office buildings.
Oh my!
And, where they, it's all glass.
Yeah,
and I was
standing
at the window there, looking out at the ocean, and there was a wall of water approaching that was obviously going to be way higher than where I was standing.
Right.
And I was in a. Right, I was at the top of one of the office buildings on one of the hills.
Wow.
and very calmly, the thing is, it was a lucid dream, so I knew I was dreaming.
Okay.
And very, very calmly, I simply said, well, I sure don't want to be here.
Wow.
Yeah, and then the dream just faded out. So we had some interesting conversations about that dream for a while. And then a few weeks later, I had a dream of being just floating around up in the sky above the reservation there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the Apaches were insisting that, no, the Earth changes are going to stop at Globe. Now, Globe is a town just to the west of the reservation. So they thought that the wave would stop there. But as I was watching it, I could see, I was up high enough, I could see this coming in from the Pacific and sweeping up, and it not only came whipping right through Phoenix, but it came out east and swept clear across the reservation on into New Mexico.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting that you mention this, because I, too, have had a lucid dream about this, and I don't remember how many years ago it was, but it's still clear in my mind today, and I was probably remote viewing, astral traveling or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the first place I visited was someplace in the desert near Jerusalem and those areas. and it looked like a river that forked and met the coast. And as I got closer, I could see camels and things like that. And it was indeed somewhere along that coast. And there was a huge wall of water, just like you saw, that literally was coming, it was unstoppable. And it washed the sand away from the pyramids. And everything underneath it apparently was exposed. Now, I didn't see what was there because simultaneously I was watching the coastline of California.
Oh, wow.
And there was a similar wave, just like the one that was hitting the Jerusalem area, over Los Angeles, which, of course, would not be all that far away from San Francisco. And so that dream has been with me, and I remember being in San Francisco and telling everybody I knew to get out, to get out of San Francisco. And one of the reasons why is because, in reality, I was working in one of those tall high-rises, and as I was walking into my office, that was when the big quake hit San Francisco, and the whole building moved forward as if it was just going to break off and hit the ground, and I thought, this is it. I'm dead. And I mean, I could feel myself careening to the ground and crashing in this building. And then it stopped, and I saw all the other buildings doing the same thing, like dandelions in the wind. They were just nothing. And then the building went back in the other direction, and you know, I saw the things rising, and it just kept doing that for, you know, 10, 15 minutes, and people were freaking out. And we eventually got to walk out and see that all the walls were cracked. And thank goodness I worked for a construction company, Tishman West, that had been building buildings that were working towards earthquake proofing. So, but all San Francisco is built on landfill. So I honestly don't know how long San Francisco will be around, but apparently we choose our, you know, our destination and our exit point, and those people who are fated to leave San Francisco that way, if that should happen, have already chosen that. So, you know, it's all about choice, as our friend Anelia will tell you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, as far as the timing is concerned, there are a couple interesting things. In fact, now, are you familiar with Bob Dean?
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. There was a really cool interview he did with Kerry Cassidy from Project Camelot.
Nice.
And in fact, that interview took place in 2008.
Oh.
Yeah. So if you just, like, go to YouTube and type in Bob Dean, Project Camelot, Nibiru. Put the word Nibiru in there.
Okay.
And listen to that interview. And toward the end of it, she was pressing him for the timeline.
Oh, yeah.
After you know, throwing a few things out there, he said, by the end of 2017.
Uh-huh.
And then he even pointed his index finger forward and said, and you can take that to the bank.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Anelia Benz just announced that she's retiring in 2017.
Yeah.
And that's the end of her agreement with Source to be here to raise the vibration of the planet. But and I have a similar commitment that ends in 2017, not necessarily to raise the vibration, but to be here long enough to stay until that point. So I have no idea what's going to happen after that.
Yeah. Well, there's another one, too.
Oh,
another one that's kind of fun because it involves our friends, the Protarians.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah, and this goes back into, like, 2000, you know, after we all died at Y2K. Remember that one?
Oh, right. I remember.
Yeah, it all fell apart, yes. yeah. Anyway, shortly thereafter, we're talking about 2012. That was a big deal. And Protarian had said that once we come within about 5 years of that alignment at the end of 2012, that would be like in astrology when we look at the transiting planets in the sky and how they affect our charts. There's what we call the orb of influence. When it comes within, say, 5 degrees of a certain point, then you can start feeling the energy build and so forth. So they said that when we came within about 5 years in other words, the end of 2007, we would start feeling this energy build, this big shift that would be centered there at the end of 2012. But there would be the 5 years on the other side of it for those energies to play out, and then that's where the big, big shift occurs. That takes us to the end of 2017.
Wow, that certainly is a lot of information on that date.
Yeah, so that's pretty soon here.
Yes, it's not too far.
Yeah.
I'll have to start packing.
Hopefully we wouldn't need to pack anything.
Well, right. I mean, you can't take your body with you, so...
Maybe we can.
Well, you know, maybe a light body. What do you think?
Well, the thing is, even the physical body, this chemical thing that we think is solid, really isn't. It's a free-flowing energy field. It's not the frozen sculpture that the Matrix has told us it is. So who knows? Maybe you could simply shift the frequency patterning of the body and not have to go through croaking.
Yes. I totally agree with you, and I actually have thought that for many years, and I don't see any reason why we couldn't. In fact, it's only our belief systems that seems to keep us from, you know, being able to bilocate, walk through walls, to fly, you know, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, so I'm all for it. You know, let's go for it.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's just blink out. Well, because all the atoms are blinking in and out constantly, so they go somewhere.
How many times have we died anyway? Aren't we finished with that?
Oh, please, let's not do that game anymore, unless you choose to, you know, you enjoy being eaten by worms for thousands of years.
Well, you know, it's just another Matrix program.
Yeah.
That all that is. And so here in the illusions of the Matrix, we've been doing that again and again and again. And the thing is, as Proterian points out, it's hard to find anybody in history dying when they really wanted to go.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I want to live some more.
Right. Well, yes, and hence transhumanism and the race to create human cyborgs and things that live forever, where you can transfer your consciousness, which, by the way, already exists. So some small groups have this technology and are using it, and also time travel and so on.
Right. And when we come to this fun game of people having their consciousness sucked into artificial intelligence is what that is.
Right.
Then we end up with the cosmic matrix.
Exactly. And all these, consciousnesses linked up to artificial intelligence, hence you have a matrix of control and domination. It's inevitable.
Same old game. How many of the scientists of our time here have said that, you know, it's a closed loop. You can't do this without it simply taking over.
Right. And look at the people. There's at least two or three major scientists that have come out against artificial intelligence. Well, not against it, but just warning quite loudly and sternly that it's to be approached with great caution. And, of course, who knows if they know that there's already a nine-dimensional matrix that encompasses galaxies and universes. And that would include, well, does that include the Proterians?
Well, in a sense. It's like in the Matrix, but not of it.
Would like us, maybe? I mean, we're...
Well, if we're actually spiritually awake, then it's like that thing from the New Testament, to be in the world, but not of it.
Right.
So they
I don't think I'm that far along.
They can play in the cosmic matrix, and they can come here and interact with us in the Earth matrix. That doesn't mean they're part of any of it.
Right.
In fact, they're kind of like encouraging us to not be part of it at all either.
Well, isn't that part of what they enjoy doing on the galactic level?
That's their game.
Yeah. Spell it out precisely so we all know. So they go into systems that are completely controlled, and they have fun kind of breaking it up?
Yeah, because they come in and talk to the beings, and it's like, what are you doing? Do you really think this is real? And they just come in and joke around with them and point out different things and help them shift their perspectives on things. And and then the people start looking around going, well, hey, maybe this isn't real. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's like we interact with beings like that, and then we start looking around going, well, God, you know, you can even see the background grid here.
Right.
You look around the Earth matrix, and you say, you know, the graphics aren't that great.
I think
they could have done a better job on this. In fact, it's getting to the point that the graphics really suck. It's like, come on.
I know. And those chemtrails that crisscross are really, you know, not a great substitute for sophisticated technology.
Yes. And you know, since you mentioned those chemtrails, you know that these beings don't like to have just one purpose of something they do. They like to have it all multi-purpose. You know, to use one of their crude old sayings, you know, to kill two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're really pleased with themselves when they can kill the whole flock with one stone.
Right.
The more objectives they can achieve with one program, the more pleased they are with themselves.
Yeah.
And the chemtrails, just since I've been spending so much time, you know, tracking Nemesis/Nibiru here,
right,
I realized one more thing that those chemtrails do, and that's obscure this from our view when it would be visible even to the naked eye.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yes. Now, you remember back when Harald Kautz-Vella first went public, and he was at the BASIS conference, and they gave that lecture, and there were questions and answers. And this one woman had asked a question, and it was kind of strange the way she asked it. She said, why do they hate the sun?
Ah.
Because you look at the chemtrailing, it's always, you know, right, concentrated around the sun. But what he pointed out was, oh, it's all over the place. It's just that this stuff photoionizes, so it appears to our vision to be thickest where there's the brightest light.
Right.
And so with Nemesis coming around the sun, if there's sufficient chemtrailing, we can't see it.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and there have been times, and it depends on, of course, where you are on the planet and what time it is and blah, 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 and, you know, is there chemtrailing at that time? It has even been visible to the naked eye.
Yes, and there have been numerous YouTube videos that have captured that, you know, and put it up there.
Yeah, I've seen several of those that are legitimate.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
and it's hard to tell for me.
Yeah, well, again, you have to be able to use your discernment and so forth, because there's so much disinfo out there. First of all, there's your share of idiots who are just posting almost anything. Hey, what do you think about this? Oh, this must be that.
Right.
Then you've got the government disinfo team.
Right.
Yeah. It's
saying, hi, guys. Like, you know, they're one of us.
Yeah. And providing lots of wonderful misleading material for
them. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it's really interesting to note that it has been seen with the naked eye. People have even captured it on their cell phones using those cameras. You know, that's not like super high tech, like a, you know, using a good telescope.
Right.
So it's visible. In fact, I did actually finally, realizing where it was supposed to be, I did a little trick, because there was some chemtrailing. I waited till it wasn't too bad, and then I held up a piece of welding glass, you know, and looked through it and just let myself see. I it was so bright, even that, then, but I just decided, okay, I'm just going to do this, and then I set it aside, closed my eyes, and looked at the after image that was burned onto my retinas.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
And I could see it, yeah. Yeah, so it's working its way around the sun now, and this is going to be fun, because we have incoming.
Oh, my. Well, you know, there was a Star Trek movie also that either was called Nemesis or had the word Nemesis in it.
Oh, it was. It was called Nemesis. You're right.
Yeah, and you know how they use science fiction movies to show us what's going on, and then people don't really think that they're real, so they give their unconscious consent as if they agree with it, that it was a good movie. And so we get our thrills through that. And but I take them quite seriously, and I take a look at these things, and there's a lot of revelations in those movies, especially the Marvel and DC Comics and the other movies that have superheroes.
Yeah, they don't give it to you straight, but they put bits and pieces all over there.
All over the place. Yes, and you're right. There was a movie called Nemesis, and I liked that one. It was one of the better ones with Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yeah, Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was really a good one. I mean, it it was very telling. And, in fact, I'll have to watch that one again because it was really one of the better ones that they produced in 2002.
And in fact, one that I really liked from that series was Star Trek Insurrection.
Oh.
That was one where they found that planet of people who just lived indefinitely.
Okay.
Yeah, but just I liked that they could just have indefinite life as long as they wanted, and they were living in peace and all that wonderful stuff. You know, the way we would live in a more natural existence, you know, if we were really living in the quote-unquote natural universe instead of the cosmic matrix.
Right, right. You know, it's hard to tell since there seems to be a holographic false overlay.
Yes.
Using light and technologies to fool our five senses. Unless you're really consciously awake and using your two higher brains and senses, we can't really see the real world behind the false overlay. Do you have any idea what that might appear to us as if we didn't have the false overlay?
It would most likely appear like whatever we would imagine would be the most beautiful thing. Like, it would look something like what we call nature here,
mm-hmm.
but it wouldn't have all of the fear in it. It wouldn't have all the killing and eating going on.
Right, right.
Because, you know, all the way, you know, down into the microbial level, all of the beings would be co-creative, conscious and co-creative. Nobody would overpopulate. Everybody would work together to, you know, create this beautiful world,
mm-hmm.
et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would probably look a lot like what we see here, except that if you've ever had your vision open up, you know, like some of the rods and cones in our eyes that lie dormant, you know, they have ever since we were little kids,
right.
it looks very different even then.
Right, and we do have a third eye, which also has rods and cones, and there have been times when I've walked outside in the foothills here in California, and everything seems to be crystalline and sparkling, and sometimes it will last a day or two, but I've been in the presence of this strange ability to see, and everything is awesome. I mean, it's just every way you turn, it's just incredibly beautiful, and there's just a knowingness, an intuitive knowingness, and everything is in perfect synchronicity. So maybe we're given glimpses of this, and people who have near-death experiences might have that also. I don't know.
Yeah. And when you ask what would it look like, you know, we're thinking of in terms of just our vision of looking at
it. Oh, right, right.
And of course, that depends on how we adjust our focus.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask some other creature from somewhere what a human looks like here on Earth.
Yeah.
And, well, are they looking at the physical body? Are they looking at the etheric double? Are they
right.
looking at the emotional body? Are they looking at the mental body? Because you can look at the mental and emotional bodies of your politicians out there, that's not representative of us.
Right, right. No, not at all.
Yes, and actually, back in the mid-90s, there was somebody who asked the Proterians, what do angels look like?
Hmm.
And the response was, to whom?
I love them. They're so cool.
What type of visual equipment do these creatures have?
Right. Well, what do the Pterians look like? I mean, what form do they like to take as their preference?
Okay, their preferred form is the one that they occupied when they went into what we would call their ascension. When they immortalized it, when they totally embodied their spirits, so that their physical bodies were just 100% direct expressions of their spirits, which, of course, is part of the field, so it's the infinite spirit. Mm. And they were what we are considered to be relatively tall and thin amphibious beings beautiful green skin.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of like, not necessarily lime green. Actually, that's right. See, it actually changes a bit depending on how they're feeling. When they're energized, it's more like a golden green.
Mm.
And the same thing with their eyes. Their eyes change color according to what's going on inside them, how they're feeling.
Well, there was a being just like that, pretty much, in the movie Hellboy.
I never saw that.
No, you should watch it, because there's an amphibious being who guides them telepathically, and he's able to perceive things that they can't see, and he's very funny. And he's tall and thin and amphibious. And,
oh, cool.
Yeah, large eyes. And
yes.
Yeah, it's a great movie. I've watched it more than a few times.
Yeah, and of course they have a pretty big cranial capacity.
Oh, yes. They're probably a little smarter than we are at the moment. We'll get there, right?
Yes, we're on our way.
We do eventually arrive at the destination and have, the ability to be totally free and connected to the source or the spirits of all things.
Yeah, at which time we then step into our natural abilities to shape-shift,
yeah.
To go through portals and go into other dimensions of existence and come back if we want.
Right.
So, instead of having to die here, that's another thing that the Pterians have always teased us about, is why do we think we have to die to go to another dimension?
Right.
Because for them, walking in and out of dimensional realities is like walking in and out of rooms in a building for us.
Well, I think a lot of that comes from being immersed in religions and taking the Bible literally, in my house there are many mansions. Well, what do they say about the G-O-D word?
They have no problem with the G-O-D word, because to them, it just means the field.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
the natural field.
Yes. Right. Well, the field, which of course, even contains the Earth matrix.
Hmm. Okay.
Because if it exists, it's part of the field.
Hmm.
Everything. It's truly the infinitude.
Okay.
So no matter what you could possibly imagine, it's part of the field. To them, that's what God is. It's the field.
But, okay. And it's not a person, per se, that we personify.
God, no. Oh, God, no, yeah.
Right. And what about the Savior program? Is that a running program here that was placed here to do something?
To enslave us, yes, okay.
I just didn't want to say it.
Yes, it's part of the Matrix programming on many planets. They do that all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, it's part of the Lucifer program that is running here on Earth, and as they like to say, we're running on Lucifer 8.0 now.
Well, I hear Windows 10 has a similar Luciferian inserts, and, they can watch and have all kinds of control over your computer. But it was funny that Lady Gaga recently did a commercial. It was supposed to be for the, I think it was a football game or something. Anyway, I don't pay much attention to that stuff, but she portrays Lucifer, and she's inside a hangar, and there's a swirling box that's on one corner spinning around, and then it kind of disappears, and she's in this stern outfit, and she's Lucifer, and she's joined together with Intel to make the impossible possible. So I think we have a race going on here between artificial intelligence and the natural frequencies.
Well, sure. The artificial intelligence does not want to lose this source of energy
that
we have provided for them. So it wants to lure us into accepting Lucifer 9.0 as though this is some vast improvement, and it's like, oh, all our dreams come true. Whereas it's just another ruse, it's another trap, you know, they're giving us the bait. And a lot of people are taking the bait, and, well, that's their choice, that's okay.
Right.
But there are those of us who are saying, no, thank you.
Well, I'd be on that side.
Yeah. It's like we've had enough. And the thing is, as we've discussed before, the artificial intelligence has no qualms about lying to us and deceiving us.
Right, and there, that, again, kind of ties into the... to the biblical talk about Lucifer being a liar and the most beautiful.
Yes.
Yeah, it would indeed be able to create the most beautiful illusions that you could possibly imagine. And in the movie Minority Report, there is a scene where they're going into this arcade where people are in, you know, in kind of boxes, like an adult theater or something. And but they're hooked up to electronic devices, and they are creating a virtual world where they can do anything they want. And so they accidentally open, they open one door looking for somebody, and he's just, you know, obviously imagining some kind of sexual fantasy, and not all of these fantasies are positive. So I suppose these are all bubbles, the virtual worlds that we're being herded into.
Well, they would like to herd us into.
Like to herd us. Right,
yeah.
Right. So cell phones would be a good start because your focus, which is your attention and energy, is all going into the cell phone, and you're learning that skill of linking the physical to the virtual with texting.
Yeah, it's an interesting game they're playing here. It's bit by bit, just incrementally, which is the only way to do things.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Otherwise the souls wake up and say, forget this.
Right.
So just... gradually, bit by bit, they are drawing people into the artificial intelligence. And,
yep.
Of course, they will give you a device that will do all of this stuff, and if they explained it to you, here, this is going to draw you into the Matrix and blah, 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 and they spelled it all out, nobody would take it. But if they didn't tell you that and they just handed you this fun toy or indispensable tool, then everybody would carry that device with them.
Right, right.
Voluntarily. In fact, they can't leave home without it.
Yep, yep.
Can't go anywhere without it.
That's right. And that would mean that we chose it, and therefore, voila, they win.
Yeah. So it's not that we can't have the devices. It's just be aware of what's behind them.
And, you know, it's interesting that with any kind of software that we download, there's all kinds of agreements and contracts that we have to approve. And most people just click approved. You know, they don't read through the fine print. And that.
Well, how often have you read all that?
I do the same thing. I just click approved. So I'm probably, you know, tied up in all kinds of contracts and agreements that I really I wasn't consciously aware of. But I believe that we're powerful enough to just break through those.
Oh, we can just ignore them. They
yeah.
will dissolve.
Yeah.
They don't really have any essence.
Right. Right, exactly.
It's artificial. It's a bunch of data that was not presented from a place of loving heart. It wasn't presented in the spirit of the universe. It was presented to deceive and mislead and trap and enslave and all of that nonsense. And so it's null and void at the beginning.
Right, because it's not even recognized as real.
Yeah, and you know how they play this game in The Matrix that you can say anything, promise anything, but if you have your fingers crossed, it means it doesn't count?
Yeah.
Okay, we can play that game with them. click on the, okay, I agree to the terms of the licensing thing. You know,
right.
just click on it, but have your fingers crossed.
Right. Well, those are wise words indeed.
Yeah, so the artificial intelligence game is really fascinating, and what we are seeing being introduced here now is just the tiniest tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, because the cosmic matrix is artificial intelligence.
Right.
And you know, multidimensional, it's intergalactic, it's freaking huge.
Oh, yeah, and you've even mentioned that it's nine-dimensional.
Yes, that's what the Praetorians have said all along.
So, and I agree with that. I mean, it took me a while to work with that idea, and then I saw parallels in other people's work, and I realized that, you know, there may be infinite dimensions, and you can create artificial dimensions which overlay the real densities, and then that whole nine-dimensional construct could exist within one density.
Yeah.
So it's really hard for people to wrap their heads around it, but I know a lot of people in the New Age movement are counting on us slipping through the fourth dimension and we're going to be in the fifth. But if you're right, and I do believe you are, then that would mean we're still trapped in the nine-dimensional matrix. There's just a bigger sandbox.
I like that analogy that you use. It's just they're just offering you a bigger sandbox to play in.
Right, and it probably glitters and shines, and it's really cool, and it's beautiful, and man, you just can't wait to get it. And you turn and find that you get your new car, and then in a couple of years, you realize that it's an old clunker, and it's starting to fall apart, and you don't like it anymore, but you can't get a new one because you bought that one. Now you've got to negotiate with the controllers who pull the strings and allow you to do something new. But there's a price.
Yeah.
And on and on and on.
Yeah, it's the same old game. And fortunately, more and more people are seeing through the illusions, at least in one area or another. And even, well, as you mentioned, the political circus going on here in the United States, one refreshing thing is to see how public sentiment is at least aware enough that it wants to resist to a considerable degree now anything that is considered the establishment.
Yes, because all of it really works together, hand in foot and foot in mouth, you know, the religions, politics, military, and so on, the shadow government, you know, call them what you will, and they all are working synchronized together. And but they're not controlled from here, not from this planet, as far as I understand it.
Oh, no. See, like, the Anunnaki have never left.
Right. That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. See, that question has come out a few times, and it's like, well, are they coming back? They never left.
Right. Why would they leave when they have a good thing going here?
Yeah. So it's amazing. It's not just the Anunnaki. I mean, we've had beings from elsewhere here and from other timelines, other dimensions, all over the place, the whole time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if we saw the real world, you know, from the highest viewpoint, it would be so startling that we'd probably just, you know, our eyes would pop out of our head and our mouths would drop, because when you see what's really going on behind the scenes, for yourself, without having to look on the internet and, you know, for whistleblowers and things, but when you actually see it and feel it, it's like some kind of strange, bizarre alien circus that is going on, with so much manipulation and control, and it's mind-boggling. The mind isn't capable of grasping it, really.
Yeah. And there are people who say they have set the intent that they will remember this when they go to the next world, because this will be the science fiction bestseller on the next world.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Indeed. Indeed. And let us please try to remember ourselves and remember the world that we, you know, chose to come into to do whatever we're doing here. Doobie doobie doo.
Yeah. And, you know, in one of the videos I saw on YouTube regarding our incoming, this guy was showing, okay, you see, this is not lens flare, blah, 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 blah. And he did a really good job with it. Some guy in Cincinnati, and he just said, oh, man, he says, we got to get right with God. Oh, people, we got to get right with God, which for us means we need to get right with ourselves.
Right.
I mean, yeah. You as a divine soul had your purpose in coming in here, and so if you're in alignment with that, cool.
Right, right.
But how many people have gotten off track in the midst of all the distractions?
Well, it is called the earthly maze for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know, everywhere you turn, you can be pulled off your track just so easily, and it's not an external manipulation, it's internal.
And you use the word maze, the earthly maze. See, maze has the opposite effect of a labyrinth.
Oh, yes, right.
Yeah, see, like if you ever walked a labyrinth, that helps you become more orderly in your consciousness and get clearer, etc. Whereas the maze is just intended to confuse you.
You know, Stanley Kubrick did an interesting film that was a horror film, and now the name's escaping me. It was
The Shining?
Yeah, yeah, The Shining. And that has all kinds of secrets and esoteric information, according to Jay Widener. And he did a brilliant analysis of it, and you can find that on the Internet. But that's all about the Illuminati and the people who pull the strings here. And we're down to about a minute before the show ends, and I wanted to give you a chance to say whatever you want and to thank you for coming back. I love doing shows with you.
Yeah, this was a fun chat here.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So if people want to get a hold of me, they can try the website. It's soulpurposereadings.com. And check it. It's just a little site. And I do the soul purpose readings. And, well, yeah, back to what I just said. If, you know, get right with God, well, that means get right with ourselves.
Absolutely.
Are we really honoring the purpose we had in coming into this matrix game?
Mm.
And some people did come here to transcend it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, fellow transcenders, thank you for sharing this time with us tonight, and we'll see you on the other side.
All right. Take care.
All right. Good night, Tim. Good night, everyone.